This episode of this podcast is Making Me Thirsty is brought to you by Cramerica Industries, solving the world's energy problems, one big giant ball of oil at a time. Welcome to This Podcast is Making Me Thirsty. This is episode number 24. In this episode, we talk to Jay McInerney. Jay is an author, a screenwriter, a novelist, an editor, columnist. He also penned the TV Guide cover story in June of 1996 entitled, Is Seinfeld the Best Comedy Ever? We talked to Jay about that and other things Seinfeld related. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoy it, please pass it on to somebody else. Trying to grow a little bit of an audience here. So thank you for listening and watching wherever you found us. Follow us on Twitter at ThisThirsty. If you want to be part of the show or just drop us a line or a question, email us at pretzelspod@protonmail.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
Hi.
Hey, Jay. All right. Thanks for joining.
How are you, Jay?
Good sound. Hi.
Yeah, we're good.
Good.
Jay, if you, an ode to you, if you could see over my shoulder here.
Ah, yes.
Look at that.
What year was that?
1996.
96, wow.
So we'll dig a little bit into that, but
yeah.
Joining us is the famous Jay McInerney. Thanks for joining, Jay.
My pleasure.
Jay is, an incredible novelist, screenwriter. You know him best from Bright Lights, Big City, and even a wine connoisseur from the Wall Street Journal, right? But he also, as you can see behind me, he wrote one of the most famous TV Guide articles of all time. Is Seinfeld the best comedy ever? But Jay, before we get into the TV Guide article, I'm just curious, we ask all our guests, when was the moment you became a fan of Seinfeld, right? Was it a season, an episode, a line, right? I mean, you were 34, right, when the show launched.
I just remember stumbling on the show sometime in the first season, probably middle, of the first season, and I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing. I remember turning to my wife at the time and saying, I can't believe this is on TV, you know, because there was something very it just didn't have the sort of trappings and the hallmarks of a really traditional sitcom. And also, you know, it had this great sort of New York sensibility that I hadn't seen on TV in quite a while. And I remember saying at the end of it, well, I seriously doubt that, you know, this show is gonna last, because it just didn't seem like something that, you know, fit any of the, of the formats or the the cliches of television at that time. And I made a point of tuning in the following week, and I just became an inveterate fan.
Yeah, that was the thing. It didn't follow the formula of the sitcoms. There was no like lesson at the end. There was no relationship humor. There was no hugging. It was just,
yeah,
there's some people in New York and they're talking and they're going through experiences. This is what's going to happen. And that was it.
Yeah.
And you're right. Yeah, you're waiting for something else.
Go about nothing.
Exactly. And you're like kind of waiting for something else to happen and just kind of never did. It's like, nope, that's the episode.
That's the show.
yeah. And you mentioned the New York City thing. And I know that, you know, you've been in New York City, you know, major part in the city for decades here now. And even in the TV Guide article, you mentioned how they captured the essence of New York City, probably unlike any other show. You know, maybe you can expand a little bit. Is there any, like, I always love the parking space scene where George and Moffat are arguing over who who gets the spot. The whole neighborhood comes out and talks about it. It's very New York City, you know, and
yeah,
other episodes. But yeah,
although I have to say, the one gripe I have that I aired in the article briefly is, you know, most of us don't have cars in the city.
And right.
To me, this kind of, that aspect of the show reflected, you know, Jerry's kind of, you know, Long Island background, you know, because for most of us, the city is about taxi cabs and subways. And indeed, there's a lot of taxi cabs and subways in the show. But there are, you know, even Kramer has a car, for God's sake. And Newman, everybody has a car, you know, which didn't necessarily reflect my, you know, experience of me and my friends in the city. But in almost every other way, I mean, it just struck me as the most authentic New York show in a very long time. And you know, it's partly the humor. It's partly the, you know, frankly the Jewish sensibility of the show, which is, you know, I think, you know, New York is composed of many ethnicities, but certainly, you know, there is a great deal of Jewishness in New York identity, even for those of us who aren't Jewish. And, you know, I mean, they sort of, you know, it's, you know, Costanza is supposed to be something else. I don't know what are the Costanzas anyway, but you know, I mean, it just seems, you know, Jerry and Kramer, and I mean, the whole show seemed to be in that great tradition of New York Jewish humor, and I loved it. You know, I mean, the ways that they did use the streets and subways and locations of New York, even though of course the show was shot in Burbank, it just, you know, normally when I see a show, or at least in that era, when I saw a show that was supposed to, or a movie that was supposed to be set in New York, I usually was angry and yelling at the screen. Felt very authentic that way.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jay, the Jewish sensibility of New York, yet this show kind of took off nationally. I was a little surprised at that.
That's the shocking thing, is that was why I turned to my wife and I said, you know, there's no way this will last, because it seemed to be so much aimed at, you know, people like me, and therefore presumably not suitable for mass American popular consumption.
Right. But yeah, I think they played New York well. I mean, back in the late 80s, probably the only show that they kind of filmed in New York was probably Law and Order at the time, right? So
yeah,
I think they did a good job encapsulating that. Today, right, there's a million sitcoms and shows that are kind of supposed to be New York or actually filmed in New York.
But let me compare it to another show that was supposed to be set in New York. You know, Friends is at this point considered a classic sitcom, and certainly has its virtues. But to me, Friends never felt like it was set in New York. You know, I mean, I didn't buy it for a minute with Friends. I just, you know, the sensibility of the show was much more homogenized, I think, than that of Seinfeld. And, but also even the location stuff, you know, just it just felt kind of phoned in, you know, in a way that Seinfeld didn't.
No, agreed, 100%. You know, the article you wrote for TV Guide, it was written before the show actually went off the air, right? It was written in 96.
Oh, yeah.
So season 7, you know, had just finished, I believe, but 8 and 9 hadn't happened yet, right?
Yeah, well, in fact, you know, I met, I'm not sure what this, I will take your word for it, but I know that the cast and the writers read the piece because years later I met Larry David, who said that they had borrowed the phrase "hipster doofus" from my piece in describing Kramer.
Yes, nice tidbit.
So I'm quite proud of that one. it was yes. Yeah, so I mean, I think the show obviously had really taken off. by that point, because, or it wouldn't have been the cover of TV Guide. And but it still seemed, you know, I think everybody was amazed that the show became so universally liked, you know, given its specificity, given its New Yorkiness, you know. I mean, before September 11th, 2001, you know, we had the sense that most of the rest of the country hated us in New York, you know, and to some extent they did.
Right. Yeah, but the question though remains though, because we're huge fans of seasons 1 through 5 with Tom Chirones as director.
Right.
And then, and O'Hara can attest, this is his big thing, but 6 and 7, the show was still good. Larry David was still there, took a slight decline, but then 8 and 9, the last two seasons, in our mind, it's a different show. All the things we're talking about right now kind of went away a little bit. The dialogue, that New York sensibility became. So is it still, would you still write that article after watching the last two seasons? We think yes, but just, you know, the last two seasons don't.
But yeah, but there was a falling off for sure. You know, and I think that, you know, and I think people in the cast have talked about that. And then of course there's the very controversial final episode, which divides viewers to this day, I think.
Yeah, what are your thoughts, Jack?
What are your thoughts on the finale?
You know,
We like it.
I do too. I thought it was a great way to wrap up the show. You know, I think that I think it was kind of brilliant. I mean, especially, you know, bringing back the soup Nazi, bringing back, you know, all these characters from their from past episodes. It was I thought it was a brilliant wrap up. I mean, I guess people thought it was a bit of a downer, you know, having him go to prison. Hey, it's a comedy. And he's telling jokes in a jumpsuit in the prison at the end of the episode. But I agree that the last two seasons were just not written at the level of the earlier seasons.
So Jay, the actual article, TV Guide, like, how did that come about? I mean, you were obviously working for a number of publications. You know, you've done a lot of screenwriting, short stories. Did they come to you knowing you were a New York guy or a Seinfeld fan? But I think, tell us a little bit about that.
I think they came to me knowing I was a New York guy, a guy who wrote about New York. And I think they were sort of hoping that I liked the show, or at least that I was engaged with the show. I don't think they realized that I was a huge fan, which I was. And honestly, I probably would have done the piece for free. But at that time, TV Guide was the largest circulation magazine in America. Frank Costanza wasn't the only fan of TV Guide. And they offered me some insane amount of money I can't remember what it, but it was more than any other magazine piece I'd ever written. So I just thought, like, yeah, I'll do this. I mean, as I said, I would have done it for free. And I was, you know, I was just a big, big fan of the show.
What are some of your, I know you in the article you mentioned.
The mail that came in was very interesting, because there were a lot of people who wrote into the, you know, this was back in the days when, you know, they had mail columns and magazines, and this piece drew an awful lot of mail, including some people who were outraged that I had compared it to, you know, classic, what they considered classic sitcoms like I Love Lucy and The Odd Couple and so on. And I have to say that some of the response was anti-Semitic. I would say it was in like 85%, you know, kind of cheerleading kind of male response, but there was a sort of 15 to 20% of the letter writers who hated the show, who didn't get it and wanted us to know that they hated it, and that it wasn't I Love Lucy. It was curious.
Yeah, and Jay, I think you made that point earlier. You know, pre 9/11, you might, post 9/11, you may not have gotten those letters as much.
Yeah,
potentially, yeah. But yeah. That's a good point.
Well, yeah, and there was, yeah, some of the letters were sort of like, you know, who cares about these whining New Yorkers? That,
right.
Was that kind
yeah,
of
I hear that a lot, too, when I would travel, because we're both from New York, and when I would travel elsewhere and talk about Seinfeld the way we talk about it, I'd get some people like, what, that's the same thing, the whining New Yorker thing. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I think they got it right.
What, so you did... you mentioned there about the I Love Lucy and the Honeymooners, right? So one of the things we talk about a lot is that Seinfeld sort of ended an era. So not only is it like obviously the greatest sitcom of all time, but it encapsulated like that pre-internet, pre-cell phone, yep. Literally ended with like the cell phone walk and talk joke when the cell phones were just starting. And
right.
And so like, it's almost like an artifact or you know, it's an archive of what life was like back then with the phone messages and all that's pay phones, yeah. And everything, right? So I wonder if
and Jerry,
that'll yeah. be our, like, you know, 40, 50 years from now, that's what everyone's watching.
Jerry had that big clunky phone in his
yes.
and he would yeah, throw it to Kramer sometimes with the cord. Exactly. You know, I mean, when was the last time you saw a phone like that? Well, you know, But it's true. It was the end of the, you know, it was the end of the internet free era. And it was, you know, I think a new chapter of history started right about the time that the show ended. And the world looks very different now.
Mm.
And
so, Jay, know, as a...
already we feel nostalgic for the world of Seinfeld, I think.
Mm.
Jay, you mentioned the article, the pen, the bubble boy, the pick, the parking garage, the junior mint, and a few others. What are your top five moments, shows that you reference a lot with friends or colleagues on the show?
Oh, well, I love the one with the wedding in India. That goes backwards in time. I just thought was an extraordinary piece of writing. That was one of the greats. I also think the episode that you reference in your podcast title with Kramer in the Woody Allen movie, George trying to park cars. That's one of my favorites. Gosh, it's there's so many, I suppose, and you know, and many of them would be would be the earlier shows, but I find myself constantly, I don't know, referencing Seinfeld and with my friends and my loved ones, and I still you know, I'm still watching it in reruns as we speak.
As we all are.
I mean, the Soup Nazi episode was a great one. The original, the one where Kramer has the armoire stolen out from under him, and Elaine discovers all the Soup Nazis recipes in the armoire. One of my favorites for sure.
Jay, what about the? It's funny. I saw a piece you did for The Week in 2009 about your favorite books, and you featured the stories of John Cheever as part of your best books.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an ode to Seinfeld fandom, or?
Well, no, but that's actually a way to mention that, because that the cabin burning down. The two episodes, the cabin burning down and then the discovery of the Cheever letters, those I think are two of the greatest, certainly of all time. I was a Cheever fan long before I saw Seinfeld, but I just thought that was such a brilliant little cultural reference slipped in there. And then, of course, you know, for fans of literature, we also have the Salman Rushdie episode.
Yeah.
The Saul Bass / Salman Rushdie episode, which was pretty great. And then, you know, here's another one of my favorites is the John F. Kennedy Jr. episode with Marla the Virgin. And John eventually sneaking Marla off and into bed where she loses her virginity. there's five or six of my favorites. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Cheever episode. It was so great. Finding the letters with the love letters from John Cheever.
Well, it's funny, Jay.
My orgasm would kill me. How great was that?
So, Jay, it's funny. You mentioned JFK Jr. Like, you've been embodied with New York for such a long time. Have you ever met Jerry or JFK Jr. or any of these, like, ancillary characters and talked about Seinfeld?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly knew JFK Jr., John, when he was living in New York. And I used to run across him at parties, and we had a lot of mutual friends. I was actually talking to him about writing an article for his magazine George before he died. I have met Jerry on one or two occasions, although I know Larry better than Jerry. Larry is actually friends with my wife Anne, whom I married in 06. And he actually spent a couple of weekends here with us in the Hamptons, and I got to know him a little bit. And he's exactly who imagine he is.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, we were thinking of that. Has any, so I'm assuming, can I, is it safe to assume you're a Curb fan too?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
A lot of crossover there, obviously. I was going to ask you.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, it's interesting how, you know, it's a completely different show and universe in a way. And at the same time, there's a sensibility which runs through both shows.
Right, yeah, the same sensibility that you mentioned.
You know, I mean, yeah, most of us, you know, many of us, of course, didn't really know who Larry David was, what his role in the show was until pretty much after it was over. But I love the way, you know, I love the way that they structured the shows. And the three, you know, they always had the three sort of parallel plots going on, which eventually wove together. And I you know, as a writer, I've got to say, some of this, particularly the first few seasons, you know, the way they were constructed, the way the interweaving, mm-hmm, of the, ridiculous as they might be, the plots and the little themes of those, you know, 23 minute episodes was really intricate and extraordinary. That was very good writing.
Yeah, we had James Altucher on last week. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all, but he mentioned the same thing about Larry David's writing and how, because Larry David felt bad for the actors. He wanted to give them all a part. So he wrote all these little, you know, stories for all of them and then just brought them all together. I mean, it's incredible. And it hasn't really been matched, that kind of output on anything, I don't think ever since or before. Seasons 2 through 5 were just incredible.
Yeah. I guess there were one or two episodes where Kramer was left out of the Chinese restaurant episode.
Yes, you're right. Kramer was not in there.
I think Elaine was left out of one of the episodes, and it caused great consternation.
In L.A., when Kramer went out there, I think in real life she was pregnant or something, so she wasn't in a couple of those.
Oh, there's another great episode, of course. It's the two episodes.
Two-parter, yeah.
Where Jerry and George go out to L.A. and looking for Kramer while worrying about how much to tip the chambermaid and how to tuck the sheets in. And Kramer gets arrested as a serial killer. those are among my favorites as well.
Lupe, yeah, we all love Lupe.
Lupe the chambermaid.
and George's shower cap.
Right. So it's funny, Jay, you mentioned you appreciate the writing, and I think that's the key to the whole show is the writing and actually how they made ancillary characters shine.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could appreciate that from writing novels and short stories, but I know you mentioned Frank Costanza, let's take him out of it for a minute, but any other secondary characters that you just loved?
I mean, you had to love Putty and Jay.
I mean, actually, O'Hara did not love Putty.
We'll agree to disagree on that one.
Let that one go.
And Jay Peterman, of course, was utterly ridiculous and wonderful, you know?
I mean, he had his moments. He had his moments.
Yeah. And, and Babu. Babu, the Pakistani
course, Babu.
Restaurateur.
Love
Where's Babu?
We love Babu.
That's one of the reasons I love the, you know, I love the finale so much, was because a lot of those guys came back. Babu was
great. Yeah, that was a great idea to bring them all back. I agree with you. And that was, you know, Larry David came back for it too, you know, to write that finale. Yeah,
yes, exactly.
So yeah. I think that had a lot, you know, he definitely was able to. And it's interesting because in your article in TV, go ahead.
But how about, I mean, I'm just remembering the Library Cop. I mean,
Bookman's one of the greatest of all time.
What a great role.
Yeah, we love Bookman.
I mean, I don't know that actor's name, but he was absolutely wonderful. But
he ended up being in a couple of Paul Thomas Anderson movies, Boogie Nights, Magnolia. Yeah. I know about Boogie Nights, but definitely Magnolia, and a couple of others. But yeah, Bookman's amazing. Because you had mentioned in your TV Guide article, you know, and you mentioned just on this, you know, this talk too, that the New York sensibility and sort of the way that all the characters were so just mean, I mean, to each other, to each other, they were just not very nice people sometimes, right? And that came back to get them in the finale. Like, that's why I kind of like the finale. Like, they owned it. They didn't say, you know, this is it. They're like, yeah, that's us.
And I think that was one of the things that was so cool about the show, was that they didn't feel they had to be nice.
Right.
They didn't feel that they had to make us feel good. And they didn't make excuses for the flaws and the nastiness of some of their characters.
Unapologetic. That's what we're missing in this world nowadays, I think.
And of course, he was more of a main, you know, he was somewhere between a, you know, an extra character and a main character. But, you know, and Newman is a great creation for sure.
Incredible.
You gotta love Newman. Or hey, you gotta hate Newman, actually. I mean...
Well, Jay, it's great to hear you're a really true fan.
This has
here.
Been great. This
you still
amazing.
Laugh about it. And so the article 25 years ago, can you believe it? Has anything come along since that day that captured your eye? And secondly, since TV Guide really doesn't exist anymore, where would that be written?
God, well, I mean, it would... I guess it would have to be on. Is TV Guide gone? I guess it is.
We were thinking about that before you came on. Like, I don't know if it exists. I mean, it might, but it's definitely not as popular. It was the thing back then, though.
Yeah, but. Frank would be upset. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it would. You know, it would have to be. It would have to be online somewhere. I mean, we still. You don't know. I guess we still have what Vanity Fair. We still have the New Yorker, but. Yeah, print, it's another thing that's dying is print culture. But I'm glad. I can't think of any comedy that's come along since then that hit me as hard as Seinfeld. I mean, of course, you know, on another front, though, we have had a golden age of television that to me kind of started with The Sopranos. Obviously, a very different type of show. But in terms of, you know, I think in some ways, you know, Seinfeld could be considered the crowning achievement of the whole sitcom form, you know?
I agree, we agree 100%.
The 30-minute comedy is, that was the last great high watermark of that genre. And I'm still watching it.
As are we. And we both agree with that 100% that it was the high watermark and it kind of ended sitcoms. Nothing can come close. Nothing really came close before either. But, this has been amazing. I don't know. We don't want to take up too much of your time. O'Hara, you got anything else?
No, I would just say I agree. Soprano, Seinfeld, if that flips by on TV, like we're watching it. And it sounds like you are too. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Jay, love the article. Love the article. We still... Again, still hanging proudly.
Thank you so much, Jay. This was great.
Hey, we really appreciate it. Thanks for reminding me. Great to talk to you.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jay. Okay.